Shall we get into it, Dave?
We shall. Welcome one, welcome all to I think the most unique at full episode we've ever done. We've done some pretty unique short ones and some pretty unique ones with guests, but of a regular traditional episode, I think a Bob Weir and the Wolf Bros show takes the cake as far as the most unique show we've ever done.
Yeah, I have to agree. I'm glad that we're doing it. You know, we talked a little bit about it in our last episode that we wanted to, in memoriam and in memory of Bob Weir, cover a show from later in his life. You know, we've talked a lot about young Bobby shows and also older Bobby shows. You know, obviously we've talked about a lot of Dead & Company shows on this podcast over the years, but we've never, aside from one brief interlude of me giving a review of seeing Bob and the Wolf Bros in Durham, North Carolina back in 2022, we've never done like a full review track by track of the show. And we thought that this would be a good time to do it. So here we are. I think we picked a good one.
It's a rock solid show. And if you're listening to us cover a Wolf Bros show, thank you. You're most likely the purest form of pothead we have if you're taking time to listen to a Wolf Bros show. And all we ask in return is just tell somebody. Tell somebody that you are listening to Working Man's Pod. It can be your significant other or your spouse. It can be a new deadhead you have in your life. It can be someone that you've been trying to pull onto the bus for a while, but all we ask, you know, we don't run ads. This is a passion project. I would be willing to guess that this is one of the few ad-free podcasts in existence in
It feels like it.
2026. So, you know, we don't ask for a lot, but just tell somebody about this and let it grow.
Well said. Yeah, we definitely get a good kick out of seeing how many people listen to this little show that, like Dave said, is a total passion project. And it's super fun. I mean, a lot of people listened last month, I think, because of the episode that we did about Bob Weir's passing, which we posted just like 24 hours afterwards. Yeah, let's keep the momentum going. We've got some fun shows to talk about this month, starting with this one. And then later on in the month, we are going to talk about the latest and, well, I don't want to say the greatest, but the latest.
We don't know yet, but
We don't know yet. Yeah. But the latest Dave's Picks entry from February 1st and January 31st, 1978, at the Uptown Theater in Chicago. That will be coming in 2 weeks' time. Dave's going to have some hot takes about the order of the tracks on that release.
I haven't even looked yet what it
Oh,
will be,
just
but I'm
buckle in, Dave.
well, we got spoiled with the latest, the 1981 release.
Yeah, it's actually not that bad. It's just the end of disc one is the last song from the first set of January 31st, and then the entirety of disc three is set two from January 31st. So, if you could have gotten that song onto the end of disc two, then you'd have it in order that it was played on January 31st. But instead, you get this Let It Grow interlude, then a second disc that's the second set of the second night, then disc three, which is the second set of the first night. Anyways.
If your head hurts a little bit listening to that, welcome. Now you know how I feel. But any that's a gripe
A
for
problem
another
for another
day.
day.
Yeah. Before we talk about this show, we should talk a little bit about the days between, don't you think?
I do. Well, I know one thing that's been happening for you in the days between, which is that you've just been cranking on some J-Rad shows.
I have, yeah. I have two very, very minor things in the days between. That wasn't either of them. But yeah, I'm listening to some J-Rad and I'm loving it. You know, The Wolf Bros is a extension of the Dead, and I wanted to listen to some other extensions, and I saw them live February 2024, and so now that it's February 2026, it popped up like, oh, 2 years ago, and it's a couple pictures from that night. I was like, oh yeah, J-Rad, and found him again, not found him, but went back to them and have just been crushing some J-Rad. Yeah. But what have you actually been doing in the days between?
I mean, I've been doing a lot, but the headiest moment of my days between is something that I texted you about, which is that I was taking an Uber ride home from a dinner the other night, and the driver was listening to 80s on 8, great Sirius XM channel. And I do really mean that. I actually really love that channel. So I got into the car and Everybody Wants to Rule the World was on, and I was like,
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
great song. And then I actually don't know if this song is from the 80s. I think it's from the 90s, but just has a very 80s vibe. Personal Jesus by Depeche Mode.
I don't know when
Anyways,
that came out.
I swear to God it's from the 90s. But anyways, that came on next. And then Touch of Grey. And I was like, hey, turn this up. And the driver did. And he and I were just jamming out to Touch, driving down the highway. And then St. Elmo's Fire came on. Also a good 80s song, but in contrast to Touch of Grey, it's just like, this is a rough hang. I actually really like that song too, but just in comparison, comparison is the thief of joy. And it's just like that guy's vocal delivery is so much. So anyways, that's my little days between. What about you?
I've got just two very minor things. The first is, as we're remembering Bobby, we lost another rock icon at the end of 2025, Ozzy Osbourne. And Ozzy got honored at the Grammys earlier this year with a really cool cover with Slash, for the guitarist of Guns N' Roses, Chad Smith, the drummer from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and pop singer Post Malone did a cover of War Pigs at the Grammys. And when I saw who was on stage, I was very intrigued. And then I listened to it, and it's a good cover. It's high energy. It's the Grammys, so it's a little shorter than the full song. But at one point they cut to the Osborne family, and they are, jamming and nodding in approval. I was surprised that Post could carry that song the way he did. And then Slash is
Wow.
obviously just excellent.
Yeah.
So check out that video if you want to see a cool cover of, I think, the greatest or second greatest anti-establishment, F the government song of all time. I think it's either that or Killing in the Name of by Rage Against the Machine.
That's where my mind immediately went. I think that that has to be number one.
Yeah.
I
I
mean, just
mean, but
the
War
end
Pigs
of
is
that
like,
song. Yeah, War Pigs is awesome.
yeah, and just the first line, like generals who are always, thank you for your service, and they've served their country for a while. Now we're going to compare them to witches from the Salem trials. Like, that song just rules. And then this.
I think the third one, if I were going to round out a top three, is just it's simple but effective war. Huh, good God, y'all.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
I mean, there's not a lot
Politician
of.
by Cream comes to mind.
There are a bunch of good ones. I mean, literally almost every Rage Against the Machine
Yeah,
song.
their entire discography. Yeah.
Yeah,
Freedom by Rage is that's like a that's a
yeah,
banger.
the entire Animals album by Pink Floyd. But there's no specific song that has the heft. But what's interesting about War Pigs, to your point, is lyrically, it's so brilliant. That comparison at the beginning, just like Witches at Black Masses. And I mean, that's a great song, whereas War is a little bit more surface level and kind of shallow, I think. And then same with Killing in the Name. Some of those who burn crosses are the same who join forces. Did I flip that around? Some of those who work forces are the same who
Yeah,
burn crosses.
that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, now we're really down a rabbit hole. There was another little moment that I saw in the days between. So the Kitchen Dwellers are like I think a bluegrassy jam band, and they I'm not super familiar with their work, admittedly. but they had a pretty charged political moment on stage just a couple days after Bob Weir died. They were finishing their show, and this was after ICE murdered yet another American citizen on the streets of Minneapolis. And they basically made a great speech about how, like, we were just in Minneapolis, and seeing how scared people are and how unsettled things are there is just like terrible. And then the guy, the lead singer of Kitchen Dwellers, punctuated his story with "Fuck Trump, fuck ICE, long live the Grateful Dead," and then charged into I think Liberty, maybe it's some dead song. But look, we don't talk a lot about politics on this show. I'm sure that we have listeners from across the political spectrum, but one thing that I think you can respect, regardless of your political affiliation, is someone speaking truth to power and executing their First Amendment right and saying what they genuinely believe, but
Yeah.
also punctuating it with "Long live the Grateful Dead" was hilarious to me. And then, yeah. So, hey, credit to them for speaking their truth. And I'm not familiar with their music, but I saw that on the Jam Band Reddit page.
No, and speaking of our convo about anti-establishment songs, like coming full circle.
Exactly. Yeah.
The second little tidbit I have, if anybody's looking for a lighter TV show, like a cute, easily crushable watch, not a heavy or dark show. A Man on the Inside on Netflix. It's created by Michael Schur from the guy who made Parks and Rec, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Good Place, and it stars Ted Danson. So it's the Good Place crew back together. The show takes place in San Francisco, and I think about four episodes end with like a dead song fading us out to credits. And so I,
Yeah.
binged that a couple weeks ago and was like, oh man, that's Touch of Grey. And then another episode ended. I was like, ooh, that's a sick like 70 or 71 not fade away. And it's a very
There's an.
crushable show, and you'll get some dead thrown in there too.
Yeah, there's one episode that ends with Scarlet Begonias. That's it's like they're in Ted's house, and then it fades out to Scarlet Begonias, and Jane was like, "Next episode?" Jane, my wife. And I was like, no, let's just enjoy this for a second." And we watched the entire credits to listen to some Scarlet. Anyways, that's the
Yeah.
days between. Should we get into the show we're here to talk about?
We should. We should. Bob Weir and the Wolf Brothers. You're gonna tell us about the band in. Well, actually, why don't you
I'm
lead
gonna
it off?
tell.
Why don't
I will
you
lead it
tell
off.
us about when did they form? Who's in there? And then what's going on?
I want to talk about the band members themselves, as we go, because something that is, I think, great about Bob Weir and the Wolf Brothers as a concept, and the way that kind of they play as a band, and that we see in this show, is that the band kind of forms on stage as the songs evolve. So the first song is just Bob and a guitar. Then come the Wolf Brothers. Then comes Chimenti, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So as we go through the songs, that is when I will talk about kind of the members of the band as they existed in 2023. But
Cool.
the Wolf Bros formed in 2018 with Bob on guitar and vocals, Don Was on double bass, and Jay Lane on drums. So they played just a handful of shows that year. And then, same in 2019. Obviously, 2020 was the pandemic, but I think the first Wolf Bros show that I ever saw was New Year's Eve 2020, when Bob and the Wolf Bros live streamed a concert from TRI Studios, Tri Studios, Bob's recording studio, which I believe is in Palo Alto, but in it, oh, in San Rafael, California, excuse me. But they were like still kind of figuring out the latency and how to play a show like that, where in front of them they had this massive screen with like fans dancing to their music while they were playing. But in this, period of time where we were just starving for live music, it was really cool to see like a full live show on New Year's Eve, stuck at home, waiting for the world to get back to normalcy. But yeah, they toured quite a bit from 2018 to 2025. They played a lot of really beautiful theaters around the country. I saw them at the Durham Performing Arts Center, which is, for my money, one of the nicest theaters around. The Cap, the Capitol Theater in Port Chester, New York, is where they played this night. And they only had one like official release, I guess two parts, Live in Colorado and Live in Colorado Volume 2, which were just like kind of a greatest hits selection from a few shows at the Gerald Ford Amphitheater in Vail and Red Rocks in the Denver metro area. Yeah, I mean, I think that that's like kind of the basic gist of the Wolf Bros. Do you have anything about the Capitol Theater? Because if not, I would love to talk about this place.
I do, but go ahead.
Dive in, dive in.
Okay. Well, the Capitol, you mentioned historic theaters when you were describing where they like to play. The Capitol Theater in Port Chester, New York is certainly one of them. People from New York City will say this is in upstate New York, but look, it's not. It's in
That's
Westchester County.
absurd. Yeah.
If you're not familiar with the geography of New York State, New York City is at like the very, very, very bottom. You can picture New York State. You've got Long Island sticking out on the bottom right. New York City is r right there on the leftmost side of that island. Westchester County is the county directly above that. It's more southern than Connecticut and Massachusetts. People from New York City, though, will say that anything north of the river is upstate New York. Look, I'm, as someone who is from the middle of the state, upstate New York to me is the Adirondack Mountains.
Syracuse,
It's north of Syracuse and Albany and Saratoga.
Oswego.
Yes. Anyway, put all that aside. The Capitol
Dave,
Theater,
off the soapbox now.
yeah, I'll step down. If you want to say it's upstate, fine.
It is up the state from New York City, but it's not
Correct.
upstate New York.
Right. Yeah,
I think we can all agree on that.
that's the best way to put it. The theater opened in 1926, seats about 1800. It actually closed and then reopened in 2012. It was purchased by Peter Shapiro, the same man who organized and put on the Fare Thee Well tour in 2015 for the
Yeah.
50th anniversary of the Grateful Dead.
A true legendary concert promoter.
Yeah. Do you want to guess who the first act at the revival of the Capitol Theater was in 2012?
In 2012.
Like as now it's back and reopening, the first
Yeah. My
person to
mind
perform.
goes to like a Phil and Friends sort of a thing.
I would say even more legendary than that would be my hint to you.
Dylan.
Bob Dylan. Yep. Nice.
Got
Good
it.
guess. And I thought this was a fun little aside. The bar inside the new Capitol Theater is called Garcia's, named in homage to Jerry. What did I miss? What else you got on the Capitol Theater? Have you ever been?
I have been, yeah. So I went and saw Phil and Friends there just a few months before this show in September. Oh no, you know what? Actually, it was September or October of 2022, because before the show, I watched the Yankees get absolutely smoked by the Astros in Garcia's during the ALCS, and that was 2022, right? The Harrison Bader year. So yeah, I flew up from North Carolina to go see Phil and Friends there because in the latter years of Phil's life, he really didn't play very many places, but the Cap was one of them. And I wanted to make sure that I had a chance to see him live before he went. It was an awesome show, great venue. It is so accessible. It's just a couple blocks from a stop on the Amtrak line that runs from the city up into Connecticut and all the way to Boston. The Metro North, I guess.
Yeah, Metro North, not Amtrak, but yeah, that train line. Yeah.
I flew into the Westchester Airport, which is a super nice little small airport, and my sister picked me up and we spent the day together and then dropped me at the train station and got up to the theater. Like I said, awesome theater. The people who work there are all great, like they're seasoned pros. The Garcia's bar is really nice. I think that it is the alligator guitar that they have on display in there, which is pretty cool. And just like good very heady artwork all over the place. The theater itself is beautiful, really good kind of standing room area downstairs on the first floor, and then a balcony level where you can have a little bit more space and chill out if you prefer that. But it's just a good venue. I also stayed at the sketchiest Airbnb I've ever stayed at in my life. While I was in there in White Plains, which is the probably like the closest actual city to Port Chester, and really feel like I was kind of connected to my deadhead roots of like taking off the cheapest flight I could find up for the day, bumming around with my sister. All I had was a backpack, forgot like a phone charger. This Airbnb was so sketchy that like I didn't want to use the bathroom even. Like
Oh
I got
no.
back at night and was just like, all right, I'm just like in the bedroom. It was like a bedroom in a house, like not even a private space at all. It was like
Oh.
$55 for the night or something like that. But I was operating on a budget. And then yeah, I will end that story there. But my experience there was great. I think it's an awesome venue, and I aspire to go back some other day. But this run that Bob was on here was, I think you could almost call it a residency.
Yeah, 5 shows in 6 nights at the
Yeah.
Capitol Theater in this time in December 2023.
Yeah, I mean, that's an awesome run. And looking at the set lists, no repeat songs. You know, they played like the entire sound songbook pretty much, including a bunch of songs that were, I mean, the opening song of this night, December 17th, Artificial Flowers. I'd never even heard this song before.
Same. And we'll talk about that in a sec. But yeah,
It just
interesting
goes to show,
covers.
yeah, interesting covers, lots of originals from, you know, the Dead, also post-Dead Bob original songs, some unreleased songs that never actually still to this day haven't found a home on a Bob Weir album. And so, you know, you really kind of run the gamut. But the thing that I think is really cool about this run, the Cap has like what, like a 2,000 person capacity, something like that. Packed it out all 5 nights. And, you know, if you have read criticisms or critiques of Dead & Company, the most common is dead and slow, right?
Right. Yeah.
If you think Dead & Company is slow, Bob and the Wolf Brothers is absolutely plodding. Like, it is as slow as it gets. But I actually think that everyone understands the assignment when they're going to a Bob Weir and the Wolf Bros show, and the
Right.
crowd is in it with him from the jump. Like, you can hear from the very first song how much this crowd is like, has Bobby's back, is there to see him, is there for whatever he wants to do on stage this night, and is just really eating it up. And there's like a real charm to that when I listen to it, and it reminds me of that kind of warm feeling that I had when I went to see this band. You know, it's such an interesting assembly of musicians, including a sit-in during this show. But just, I'm really glad that we're covering it, because I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was thinking about a good analogy for it, and I think a movie analogy kind of works. If you go to, if they did like a remake of Terminator and the action scenes weren't as good in the remake, you'd be like, yeah, that remake, it didn't quite do it for me. If you went to like a screening of Wuthering Heights or like a Jane Austen romance movie and you were like, where the hell are the action scenes, man? You'd be so out of place. That's what I think
Right.
it's like. If you go to Dead and Company expecting the Dead and the pace of the Dead and that energy, a lot of times that energy was there. Sometimes it was pretty slow. If you go to a Wolf Bros show and you're like, they're not picking up the pace, come on, like you're in the wrong spot, dude.
Yeah.
The crowd is with him from the jump. And I think knowing it's a Wolf Brothers show, some of the songs, we'll talk about it more in detail later, but Black-Throated Wind is one of them in particular, where the way that they've adapted and molded the slower tempo into a more jazz forward approach does work for a good chunk of these songs.
Totally.
Orient yourself is what I would say. You're in for
Yeah.
a slower, like the space between notes and that exploration is something that I commend Bobby for he never stopped trying to do something different or trying to find tweaks and critiques and innovate different ways to play it. And one of those innovations was slowing it down and creating more space to explore and have other musicians fill in those gaps, which, as we'll get to when you talk about who's on stage, like they do. So, yeah, I agree. Look, the pace is off. There are a dozen or more vocal flubs, but what's encouraging is
It's part of
every
the
time there
charm.
was a vocal flub, there was like a standing ovation. Like the crowd had his back. They were like,
100
"You still
percent.
got it, man!" You know, encouraged him to come back. And yeah, we'll
Fifth
talk
night.
about that all in 1 second. But
Yeah.
we don't get to talk about the recent years very often. So I do want to tell you a little bit about what's going on in the world in 2023.
Yeah,
It
remind me.
wasn't that long ago, but it feels like forever ago
It does.
that. The nationwide craze in 2023, if you remember, particularly in the summer, was Barbenheimer, the two movie like blockbuster A1 double punch that the movies got of Barbie, which dominated the box office in that summer, and Oppenheimer, which dominated the box office that summer. Barbie ends up the number one movie of the year. Oppenheimer broke the record for the highest grossing movie to never reach number one in the box office. And it's just because Barbie is the number one movie of like every week that Oppenheimer is in theaters. But Oppenheimer is like a close second every week that it's in theaters. So
That's
that was
wild.
pretty interesting. The number one movie the week of this Wolf Brothers show in December 2023 was Wonka, the Timothée Chalamet, Willy Wonka. Half remake, half prequel.
Haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either. I don't
I'm
know.
sure it's fine.
I'm sure it's well done. And, you know, the idea of a prequel is interesting to me.
Yeah, the Johnny Depp one was a prequel too when we were in like high school, college age. I don't know. That one is one to me where I understand the desire to keep remaking it, but like the Gene Wilder one is so perfect. It's hard to.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I think we talked about this last time with The Great Gatsby. The Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Willy Wonka universe will be a story that is remade and retold every 15, 20 years until the end of time. Like that is
For
a
sure.
plot device that will carry forward for the next, you know, 300, 400, 500 years. Just I don't need to see this one.
No, that's totally fair.
Is Chalamet ahead? We don't know.
I feel like he's so. I have no reason to know this or even really expect it, but I feel like he has at least had some exposure to the dead.
If I had to guess, having never met him, and I don't really like watch a lot of interviews on late night talk shows or
No, me
anything with him,
neither.
something about his whole vibe makes me think that maybe his parents were heads. And he inherited like a little drop of it,
That's
but
kind of what I was thinking too, just because I know he's a New York City kid, and I just feel like it's just kind of baked into the DNA. But who knows?
who knows?
What was the number one song of the year or of this week in 2023?
Yeah, so look, music is weird post-COVID with how it's tracked. It's tracked based on streams instead of sales. So the number one song in America the week of this Wolf Brothers show is All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey because the concert's taking place in
A
December.
week before Christmas,
Right. Yeah. So look, that didn't come out in 2023.
yeah, it didn't even come out in like the
In the
2020s or the
right.
2010s. Sounds like a 20-year-old song.
You know, that is the ultimate money printing machine. That song will be
Oh,
played
yeah.
in the month of December or earlier if you're a weirdo. You know, until the end of time.
Or if you like joy, I'm not going to judge. If you want to be in the Christmas spirit before December, Godspeed to you.
Yeah, just not under my roof, that's all.
No, nor mine, but just
Yeah,
saying.
as best I can tell, the highest charting original song in
New
December of
song.
2023 was Water by Tyla. You know the chorus of that song, the beat will ring in your head either from social media or just like, you know, being at a Denver Nuggets game. I'm sure it's played over the speakers.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, like an Afrobeat R&B song, is how I would describe it. and fairly catchy. Who's got a birthday on December 17th? Not Timothée Chalamet, but some other good acting celebrities. Eugene Levy, Bill
Oh.
Pullman, Ernie Hudson, Rian Johnson. I know you're a big Knives Out fan. I am as well, so we like that. Chase Utley, Manny Pacquiao, and Pope Francis, our most recent
Wow.
pope before this
I can't think of
Chicago
his name
Pope
either.
guy.
Chicago Pope.
Chicago guy. Yeah, that's his papal name is kind of meh.
Is it Pope Chicago?
It's not. That would be a dope papal name.
Pope
Leo the
Dicka?
16th, Pope Leo the 16th,
Ah.
is
Should have
our
known.
current, well, is the current pope, and his predecessor, Pope Francis, born on December 17th. Some sad deaths, sad-ish deaths on December 17th. Kim Jong-il. That's why I say ish. Penny Marshall from A League of Their Own.
That is a sad one, yeah.
And then P22, the Los Angeles area mountain lion, who apparently was like blew up and was very big in the 2010s in California.
Huh, okay.
I guess kind of more of a local legend for our California listeners, but I had never heard of P22, but apparently he was a local icon who unfortunately was put down on December 17th, 2017, after a veterinary examination revealed it looked like he got hit by a car, which is very sad for our boy P22.
Yeah, poor buddy.
And that's what I got for 2023 and what's going on in the world. The only other thing to mention about 2023 is that Bob Weir and the Wolf Bros played 54 shows in 2023, which is easily the most shows that they ever played.
That's
And
wild.
yeah, man, they were going.
I guess so. Jeez. I mean, that's, I guess 2023 was also the last Dead and Co year. And they played a lot of shows that year. Bob was an absolute road warrior in 2023.
Yeah, man.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, should we get into the songs? That's what we're here for, right? Both Dave and I listened to this show on Nugs, which we both have subscriptions to. But understanding that not everyone has that or cares to have that, which is totally fair. God knows we all have enough subscriptions in our lives these days. There is an audience version that's available on the archive, but the sound quality is not great. And, you know, we often use audience recordings as clips on this show, but this one, it's good and it's enough that you can hear the show for sure. But if we were going to put samples in, it would largely just be kind of crowd noise and, you know, hearing the audience's reactions. So we're going to not do that for this show in the name of having a higher quality sound throughout the episode. So, as we kind of go through it, if you want to go listen on the archive, we're going to put a link in the show notes to that so you can find it. But yeah, no samples for this one episode only.
In a trying to find a positive of that, I think I encourage you to go seek it out yourself. You know, if you have a Nugs subscription, great. If you don't, or maybe not this Wolf Bro show, but if there's one of a slightly better quality, you know, kind of like what we wanted to do. We wanted to hear Bobby at all spheres and phases of his life, and this is one of them. And this one of them starts with a cover that's new to me, Artificial Flowers. What'd you think about this one?
Yeah, I'd never heard it before either. It's an old standard, but made famous by another Bobby Darin. Not something that I would expect to hear Bob Weir perform, but I think it really works. It's just Bob and his guitar out there to open the show. For the only song of the night where that's the case. I think that that's something that he commonly did with the Wolf Bros. And it's a very, there's a very showman-like thing going on here where, you know, as we'll talk about, the band just keeps getting bigger song after song to start the night. But you can hear him really stretching for some of the high notes on this song. There's a classic vocal flub here. But the, like you said earlier, the crowd is just so with him. They are willing to cut him all the slack, and it feels like they're just hanging on every word, as you know, Bob and his guitar, that old storyteller up there, just belting out a classic. So I dug this actually.
Okay. I liked at the end of the performance, he apologizes to the crowd. He's like, "Sorry, I thought I remembered that one better." And it
Yeah.
was like, "Yeah, dude,
It's endearing.
you're old and you're covering a 1960 song that no one has heard of. Like you can forget the lyrics. It's okay." And the
Yeah,
crowd
we're
lets
gonna
him
cut
know
you
it's
some
okay.
slack.
They're with him all the way.
Yeah, from a song none of us have heard of to a song everyone's heard of, Friend of the Devil comes next, and now enter the Wolf Bros. So Don was on the double bass and Jay Lane on drums. Don is better known as a producer, like by a long shot, I would say. 6-time Grammy winner, I think most notably for Album of the Year, which is, the biggest award at the Grammys, some would say. For Bonnie Raitt in 1989. He's also the co-founder of Was Not Was, a very eclectic 80s band best known for the song Walk the Dinosaur. Come on now, get on the floor. Everybody walk the dinosaur. Dave was questioning if he
I
knew that
had a
song.
question look on my eyes, and as soon as you started singing it, I was there with you. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's also produced for like literally everyone. The Stones, Dylan, Iggy Pop, Elton John, the B-52s, and most notably for our purposes, John Mayer, who he introduced
Oh.
to Bob Weir.
Wow. That's.
Mayer had told him about how he was like obsessed with the Grateful Dead at that point in life, and Don said, "Hey, I'm in the studio with Bob, you want to come over?" And Mayer said, "Sure." And then
Wow.
the rest is history. That night, Mayer was hosting or guest hosting, I think, the Jimmy Kimmel Show, and invited Bob to come on as a guest. They played Althea together. Literally, the rest is history. So I think that that may be Don's greatest contribution.
Yeah, outside the studio for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's a good double bassist, and he has a good voice that I think works when he kind of sings backing vocals. Jay Lane is a San Francisco native and the founding drummer of Rat Dog, Bob Weir's project that was running alongside the Dead for the last year or two, and then I think maybe just the last year, 95, and then really kind of what Bob was focusing on in the years immediately following Jerry's death. He also played with a bunch of other bands over the years, a true professional musician. But I think the two biggest items on his resume are Primus, who he was the drummer for two different stints, and then Dead & Company. He was their backup drummer for Billy when Billy's health started to kind of fade, and would sometimes even come in for like the second set of shows when Billy couldn't finish a show. And then once Billy left the band, Jay came in as their primary drummer. So yeah, that's who's on stage now for Friend of the Devil. And to me, it is just amazing how big these three can make like the intro crashes sound. It's just a drummer, a double bass, and Bobby, and it sounds so full. And I just think that this song works really, really well with a trio. There's so much open space, which makes a lot of sense because like this to me is like the number one or number two at the lowest Grateful Dead campfire song. Like if someone has an acoustic guitar
Oh,
and is gonna sing
yeah.
a Dead song around a campfire, it's either this or Ripple. And so it sounds really good to me. I love Bob's solo that starts at the 3-minute mark. It's simple, it's effective, and has a classic, like very angular conclusion right around 4:45. The thing that I think is interesting here is the crowd is singing along, but they're singing so much faster than Bobby and the band are playing. And so it's like they're expecting it to sound like, the Friend of the Devil album cut. And it's like 40 beats per minute slower than that. But I think it's a good performance, and for like the first Dead song of the night, it's one that just really works, and it works with this group of people on stage.
Yeah, the collective crowd is like one giant backup singer, but it was pretty funny hearing them like the tie, like there was the ebb to try to play it faster, and then professional musicians really locked in, keeping time to slow it down a bit, and then the crowd trying to pull them the other direction. Yeah, I really liked at around the 3 minute mark when Jay switched it to like the stick hits on the drums instead of the traditional snare and kind of changed up the swing of a little bit. I like that. Also, I'm just realizing in case we have listeners who did not like grow up playing or watching like music, orchestra music, when you talk about the double bass, it's not two basses or a bass with many strings. It's the stand-up bass, like the big
Yeah.
classic orchestra bass, just in case someone
It's a
didn't
good
know
thing
that.
to note.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought an enjoyable friend of the devil.
Yeah, I thought it was
And
solid. And I think that the beginning of this show is not the strength of the show. And I think that's coming a little
yeah.
bit more still, but the
I completely
first
agree.
good song we get of the night, I think, is the next one, which is Big Boss Man, which kind of surprised me that we were doing a Pigpen song by the Wolf Bros. That I guess I wasn't expecting that, but it's got
Oh,
some
I mean, they're doing
real
everyone's songs.
yeah. Like you said, five shows in a row, no repeats. They're pulling everything
Yeah.
out of the bag, but
No Brent songs and no Vince songs, but aside from that, you got a lot of different options. No Donna song, although I do wonder if we looked at the set lists, it would be wild if Bob played like, I don't know, Sunrise.
yeah, I don't think he's doing that.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But anyways, yeah, Big Boss Man, enter Jeff Chimenti on the keys. Long, long, long time Dead pianist, beginning with Rat Dog in 97, and then the Dead, including the Fare Thee Well lineup, the other ones further, and for the last almost decade, Dead and Company. So now he's on stage. He's not one of the Wolf Bros, that's Don and Jay, but he became a full member of this band by the time it was all said and done. And I think that, you know, the nomenclature here is Bob Weir and the Wolf Bros featuring the Wolf Pack. I think that Jeff is the leader of the Wolf
Oh,
Pack.
okay. Huh.
Yeah, I think that I agree with you that this is a good performance, and now you're hearing the full sound now that Jeff is there. Not the complete sound, but like a more full sound.
Right.
Bob's got a little bit of gruff in his voice. You can tell he's performed five shows in 6 nights, but I really like this is another one where like there's so much space that they're kind of creating in the way that they're playing it. I love the "She Won't Let Bobby Stop" little vocal change that he
Same.
drops in.
Yeah,
The
like
crowd loved it too.
implying that he's not gonna stop playing, and you know, he never did.
No. And then I also really like Bob's blues solo that starts at like the 2 minute mark. I think that that is really good, but it kind of pales in comparison to the solo that Chimenti rips off at like the 4:30 mark.
I know, dude. That solo is excellent.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a great example of what we, and by we, I mean you and I, love about him. Like, he is not afraid to take up space and to let it rip. He just absolutely drowns the audience in a waterfall of notes during this
Yeah.
solo. The conclusion of it is tremendous. And then I love how right after like the loudest moment of the night we've had by far, they break it all the way down to an extremely restrained segment right afterwards. Just a really cool performance, and I dug it a lot.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice slinking blues cover, and I mean, you hit on my biggest point, which was I could use Chimenti 200% louder in the mix, but what we got from him on this song just ruled. From Big Boss Man into Brother Esau, the drum work in the penultimate measure of the intro really stood out to me as like a statement of arrival. There was a cool little, extra couple hits on the toms. This is not my favorite Dead song, and it's definitely not my favorite slowed down tune, but I thought so far, like Chimenti just crushed the Big Boss Man. I think J Lane just absolutely crushed the drumming on this Brother Esau.
Yeah, I the standout to me actually on this is Bobby. So now enter another member of the band, Barry Sless on the pedal steel. The sound just keeps getting bigger. We're one song away from the whole band being on the stage. Barry, just a really good musician. He doesn't have like the kind of top tier quote unquote credits that, you know, Jay and Jeff and Don have, but he's played with a ton of bands over the years. Phil and Friends, Kingfish, those are probably the two like dead ones that people would know. But he's just been a touring musician and a great guitar player for years and years. Awesome on the pedal steel. He really becomes like the lead guitarist from this point forward in the show. But there's a really good Bob solo at like the 3:30 mark. He's got that steely sound that he seemed to just love in his later years. But what I really like about it is he's not forcing the issue or like getting too crazy. He's just like very comfortable staying within his lane and then letting it unfold into this really cool jam between Chimenti and Barry Sless. I also like the little rap starting at like 7:10, just like a different vocal take on this song with this band. But I think that this is where the show starts to just kind of get better and better and better, because the next song is when the Wolfpack hits the stage. So you have Brian Switzer on trumpet, Adam Theis, I think is how you pronounce it, or Theis, Theis on tenor trombone, Sheldon Brown on the sax, the clarinet, bass clarinet, flute, and bass flute. He's just playing whatever they need him to play.
Wow, yeah.
Mads Tolling on the violin, and Alex Kelly on the cello. So now you have like a full orchestral sound going on. You got the horns, you got the strings. Barry's there on the pedal steel, Chimenti on the keys, Jay and Don, obviously Bobby. It's a big band now.
Yeah.
And I love on this song that they all come out for, Greatest Story Ever Told. Really cool arrangement, I think. And Bob is belting this shit out from the jump.
Yeah, man, this, like, when this song started, this would not have been my, like, first, second, or even fifth choice of, like, what song should we incorporate a big brass band sound into? This never would have popped into my head, but, like, wow, it works. The intro section is powerful with them
Yeah.
all announcing that they've arrived, and from the jump, all the way to the solo near the end, it all works so well. And these are professional musicians who know what they're doing, but they really found a way to make, again, a song that I would not nominate to be played by a full orchestra to really come to a new life and take on a new flavor.
I agree. I think that it also just shows what a generous band leader Bobby is, because if anyone's sound is getting kind of drowned out in the mix, it's his. And he is
Yeah.
seemingly totally comfortable with that. There's just an awesome jam that starts at like 4:15, that wah-wah steel sound, and then the horns and violin behind it just sound amazing. But I felt a lot of times towards the end of the song like my brain just like couldn't keep up with all of the sounds. You know, going from like the stripped down just Bobby and a guitar opening to the show to now this absolute cacophony of noise. Noise that maybe sounds like I'm saying it in a negative way. I don't feel that way at all. Like it's so powerful, and it like takes me a second to kind of get behind it. But I thought that this was a really cool take on Greatest Story Ever Told.
Same. I was really, really impressed by this so far. I know we're only five songs in, but so far, I think this is the high point of the show. It won't remain that way for the rest of set one, but
Agreed.
that's a good thing. The playing gets better and better. But yeah, so far, this was great. It was the greatest story so far.
Yeah. My opinion is that we actually dip a little bit after Greatest Story. We go from there to Black Throated Wind. It feels really natural to have the horns on this song, like on the album cut. And it's another song where it feels like the pedal steel just takes up the most sonic space in the arrangement. And I feel like that is a personal, like subjective thing. To me, I don't think that it works extraordinarily well on Black Throated Wind. I do really like the horns at like 6:15, 6:20, very exalted and like kind of rich sound that they're providing. But to me, the show kind of like slags a little bit, at this point in the first set. It just doesn't feel like song is like perfect for the group.
Especially in the beginning of this song, I agree with
Yeah.
you. I thought the there's like an estimated profit esque that the pedal steel has at the very beginning of this song. I thought that was a neat way to hear the main riff of Black Throated Wind. But I'll read you this note and see if you agree. The beginning of the song was quite meh. The second half of the song is truly excellent music. I think, yeah, around the 6:30 mark, they almost go into a type two jam that really has them exploring some cool spots, and they kind of are spinning out after about a minute of type two jamming. I mean, Chimenti, I don't know what he's doing. It sounds great, but I don't know what he's doing. You know, the brass is kind of all over the place. And then right as you kind of feel like they are gonna collapse on the stage, it's like a on the drop of a dime, they are back into the main Black Throated Wind riff. I'm sure live Bobby was pointing and giving a signal, and they pop right back into it. But I enjoyed that freeform spinning, nearly out of control jam at the middle and the end of the song. What I mean by like out of control, it kind of felt like every musician was playing something a little bit different. And so that cacophony of noise that you talked about is definitely here, but that it came together in this swirling, oscillating way that really intrigued me in the second half of the song. And I kind of wish that they gave it another minute or two to explore it before they hop right back. It's almost jarring how they're way out there and then 1 second later they're kind of
Back to Earth.
right back on track. I enjoyed it overall, but I agree that we went from a real peak with Greatest Story and the first half of the song I was like, ooh man, but I think the second half it redeemed itself.
Okay, I can get behind that. I mean, there was a comparison that I was thinking about a lot during this show, which is like the SNL comparison. SNL, not every sketch is going to be, a 10 out of
Oh,
10.
right.
Like, there are some that are going to be sevens and fives and even threes. Like, they just don't land at all. And this show has a lot of that where it's like, Bob is trying something audacious with a band like this and like trying to have a jam band that also has, a cellist and a violinist and three horns and having them fit in with also a double bass instead of an electric bass and a piano. I mean, there's just a lot of sound, and I don't think that every song you can even expect to be like unbelievably good. The highs are extraordinarily high, though, I think. And, we're building towards, to me, what is like the high point of the whole show. But before we get there, Samson and Delilah is the next song with Omar Hakim stepping in on the drums. Omar Hakim is like a legendary session drummer, jazz. Pop, like he's played with Bowie, the Foo Fighters, Sting, Madonna, Dire Straits, Journey, Kate Bush, George Benson, Daft Punk, Mariah Carey, Celine Dion. The list goes on and on and on. He's just a great drummer. And it's really interesting to me. He comes on stage and I found photos. He's just sits in on Jay's drum set. It would take up a ton of space on that stage for him to have brought his own kit out there. He makes these drums, specifically the toms, sound completely different than anything that Jay has played all night.
The reason I'm kind of chuckling and I'm surprised, it sounds like a different drum kit.
Yeah,
I
it
thought
really
maybe
does.
they had like a couple, maybe a smaller side kit set up for him and have him come play
Doesn't
a
look
couple
like
songs,
it.
but that's insane that it's the same kit.
Yeah, I went to find pictures because I was like, why these toms sound like booming. This is crazy. How does this sound so different? I mean, he's a great drummer. It's a really cool sound when it's just him and Bob in the early going.
Yeah, which is like the entire first chorus. It's just him, Bob, and the crowd. It's really interesting to hear it that
It
way.
is. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. It's just like so, we've heard this song so many times and both of us love this song and that take on it. Where it's just a drummer and Bob on the rhythm guitar and him singing is really cool. Like, definitely worth it to listen to. I think that Bob gets really gruff with his singing but he's got that like just the right amount of stank on it. And then it also feels like maybe the band gets off track a little bit. Bobby has to count them back in with an emphatic one, two, three, and then like for them to close out the song.
Yeah, I wrote that off as like a guest drummer who maybe, didn't.
He was pushing the tempo a little bit.
Yeah, they really do botch the ending, but up until that
It's
moment,
smooth.
it's really great. There's an energy shift around the 6 minute mark where Bobby and Omar like really give it a little extra oomph for the last 2 or 3 minutes.
Yep.
There was a little more fuzz in Bobby's guitar tone too. Like it was a little less twang, a little more fuzz. And I was like, Bobby, play like this the rest of the night. Like use that tone. It's excellent. Yeah, they kind of butcher the ending. Yeah, but like, and it's not like a measured set of four either. It's like they play three, and Bobby's like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Whoa.
No, no, no.
Yeah.
Like 1, 2, 3, 4. And it's like I wrote it off as like, yeah, it's a guest drummer that he was figuring it out. He didn't quite have it down, but the rest of the song is very well done that I was able to look past it.
Yeah, I agree. I also feel like my any reservations that I had about that song going into Weather Report Suite as the conclusion of set one, which, spoiler alert, to me is just the high point of this show.
Yeah, not just to you either. This is the highlight of the show, these next, two songs, but Weather Report Suite into Let It Grow, as I think of it as one giant
Yeah, me too. I mean,
story. Yeah.
ultimately, like on Wake of the Flood, Weather Report Suite, like Let It Grow is just the end of Weather Report Suite, and so I get why they break it up on the like set list, but ultimately it's I think of it as just one song the way it was on the album. Awesome intro with just the string section, then come the drums and the horns. When Bob comes in, he fits into the mix like a glove, and we just like float into the first verse with this gorgeous swoon of music at like 1:33. And then another like moment like that at 3:10, where it's just like the music is so beautiful. The arrangement with all of these musicians, it makes sense because like on Wake of the Flood, they did have horns playing on this song with them. But man, I just think it's a beautiful performance. I have many more notes, but what do you have?
No, I have a lot of it is stuff you said. Just we both said it. I think it's one of the two high points of the show is the beginning and the intro to this song. The first half is exceptional. I had one critique or one thing I wish I could have changed. The vocals at the end kind of made me miss a Donna-esque figure, like a female anchor to really hold us strong at the end. The stacked like Chimenti Weir Woz vocals just wasn't working for me at the end of the song, but the
Bob's giving
playing
the
is
thunder shouts,
so
though.
good.
He's listening to the thunder shout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The musical playing on this song was so great.
Yeah.
And before we dive into Let It Grow, is there anything we missed on it?
I took all of my notes together, to be honest.
Oh,
So,
okay.
I mean, the only one I guess that is probably from the Weather Report Suite, like parts one and two, is I was not sure how the pedal steel would fit into this song. I was a little bit dubious coming in when I saw it on the set list. And honestly, I'm still not sure how well it fits within the song. But what I will give Barry credit for is he's playing it kind of sparingly and he's letting the other members of the band kind of take center stage. It's a song that is so clearly like perfect for all of the other musicians that are on there, and he gets enough shine throughout the show anyways. I love the horns at, I guess this is now into like Let It Grow. Subtle strings just kind of like backing in the beginning. And then at 3:15, the horns are just awesome. The first trumpet solo gives like a almost like a Western flair to it. And then you get this like right after that, like the synthy symphonic sound that makes it sound almost like 80s-ish, which is an interesting like kind of 1-2. But I mean, to me, that's like the beginning of just like, oh man, this is absolutely ripping. And then you get this long trumpet solo leading up to the 7 minute mark that just rips and is followed by a really cool, really spacey violin solo
Yeah.
that then turns into almost like a fiddly solo by the end of it, like very jaunty. I mean,
But before we dive into the end too, just to go back to the horns, around the 5 minute mark, they go from like an emotional rock feeling to like a intimate jazz feeling. And around that time, I think we're hearing in its purest form the mission statement of the Wolf Bros and the Wolf Pack. Like they really want to explore jazz jamming in the structure and the bones of a dead song, but out of the main theme. I think that this is like, if I were to nominate a Wolf Bros thesis statement, we've talked about how Dark Star would be like the Dead's thesis statement. I would submit this Let It Grow, because they find their space to, I think, do exactly what they want to do right from that 5 minute mark to right before the violin, well, up and including that violin solo. And it just makes me think, credit to Bobby, man. Like, how many 70-year-olds do you know that would be like, well, I've been doing it this way for 30 years, so this is the way we're going to do it. And instead, it's like, no,
Let's take a huge swing.
and let's interpret this song I've been playing since 73, 74 in a new way, in a new light, and innovate it to have a new way to communicate a connection to the audience. I'm just so impressed by that. And impressed with the music on its face, on its sound waves. I don't know what the right term for that would be, but also impressed taking a step back and looking at the bigger picture that like Bob was still finding new ways to explore and never got set in his ways, I guess. He was always willing to adapt and find a new way to do it.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, talk about a great lesson for us to try to learn and embody from him. I only have one more note on this, and that is just that the interplay between the strings and the horns starting at like 9:10 and before the whole sound comes back together for just one of the most giant dramatic moments of the show, concluding like the 10-minute mark. I honestly like got to that and I was like, I don't even know if I want to listen to the second set. Like, this is so good that I almost just want to end this right now and just like let that be my enduring memory of this show.
Yeah.
It's so freaking good. Like, if you are still listening to this episode, I'm sure it's because you want to listen to this show or you have listened to the show. But if for some reason you were kind of maybe debating, oh, maybe I won't listen to the whole show, if you just listen to this song, I think that would be great.
Yeah,
So,
I think you'll
yeah.
get it. And you'll, I hope, enjoy as we did the like pure chaos in the second, crunchy jam, dramatic ending where the saxophone is like out of control. I don't think does it justice. It's like, it's as if it's like a sentient AI technology that has taken over and is now like running rampant. And the rhythm section is building and building and building and building. And the saxophone is just going crazy and insane. And everything about it just worked for me. I was like, man, this is wild and crazy, and I love it. And then they do wind it down to end the song, but
And
yeah,
then the
just
set.
a delightful Let It Grow.
It really is. Set two begins with me and my uncle. So, all right, here's the thing. I think set two is actually quite a bit weaker than set one. I don't know if that's a hot take. What do you think about that as a premise?
I think that the low point of the show is in set two. I think they're mirror images of each other. I think the high point of the show is in set one, and overall it's a fine set. I think the low point of the show is in set two, and I think it's a great set.
Wow. All right.
And I think it starts with a damn good Me and My Uncle, dude. I was into this slowed down version of this song.
Yeah, I like how twangy and jangly it is.
Yeah. And right, even before they start playing, Jeff is getting like harassed but with love as he
I
comes on
know.
the stage. It's like, Jeff, Jeff, come on, man, Jeff. And like, he's getting some love from the crowd. And I get
Masses
it.
love Jeff. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like the solo that he has that stretches around the 5 minute mark with Bobby and Barry holding it down behind him is like his high point so far. It leads to an awesome pedal steel solo right afterwards, naturally. Like that
Yeah.
just feels so right for this song. But it to me, I almost connected those two things in my mind where I was like, I wonder if Jeff was like really kind of laying it on thick after his boy in the audience was just like giving it up to him at the beginning of the second set. Yeah, I agree. I really like this, Me and My Uncle. I think that it's one of the high points of the second set, actually. It's just that I think from here we have a ways to go.
Yeah. And I think before we do that, though, I think the set break really helped Bobby too.
Yeah.
Voice was sounding, I think, a lot better than it was in set one. Like, he, I don't know if he had some tea or whatever over the break, but voice sounded good. His playing was crisp. And I was just impressed that they took a 2 minute tail and turned it into an 8 minute jam.
Yeah.
I thought that was really neat. And yeah, the pedal steel was like, so clean. It was shiny. It's a weird way to describe the audio of a guitar, but that whatever that tone, like that Hispanic flair tone, was as clean as you could get on the guitar, and just really stood out as a overall, like this run of Weather Report, Suite to Let It Grow, to with a break, but then to Me and My Uncle, I think an excellent trio. But looming next, we have, I think, is the low point of the show in
Yeah, I
a
agree.
not only a slow shakedown street, a shakedown street where Jay Lane counts in the tempo and Bob stops him and says, "Whoa, whoa,
That's
whoa,
too fast.
too fast, slow it down." And I was like, "Oh no." And
Mean,
then,
Shakedown Street
yeah.
is a disco song, and for it to be as slow as it is, it feels bad. I also So this is a pet peeve of mine. There is nothing more reliable than a 2020s audience just whiffing on the woo.
Oh, just horrible
It's so
execution on
bad.
this one. Yeah.
The crowd, I mean, they wanted it to be faster so badly, and they just like the it is like all-time whiff.
But
So
what makes it even worse is that about a quarter of the crowd does get it right. So you get two woos. It's like,
yeah,
dun
it's like
dun
an
dun
echo.
dun dun, woo! Woo, nothing shake. Like, it's really that bad. And it's like, oh, guys, man, that's
Yeah, clean it up.
way too early. Yeah. I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up my younger cousin Liam. Whenever
I was thinking about this too, actually.
criticism of, Dead and Company being dead and slow, what's so great about this bit he does is he does it both making fun of Dead and Company for being too slow, and it's also making fun of the people who complain about it being too slow. If there's any critique of Dead and Company playing slow, he'll put on his Bob Weir voice and he'll just hit you with the slowest, well, you can never tell. It's so great the way he does it. He's got that voice that can also go like deep old Bobby for a 21, 23-year-old. It's great. It's one of my favorite things he does, and would be remiss if I didn't bring up maybe the slowest shakedown I've ever heard without telling this.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give two positive notes on it. I love Jeff's backing vocals on the well, well, well. Sounds great. And then I also do think that after the last chorus, this like interesting slinky jazzy place that they take it to just feels very, very different from what I've heard on almost any Shakedown Street. And it is interesting, if not captivating.
I
So
wrote, okay, credit where it's due. They find something good around the 12-minute mark. A kind of somber jazz ballad gets constructed.
yeah, but as you just said, it's at the 12-minute mark.
Yeah.
So it's a long journey to get there. Yeah, so this is just like, I think fair to say, like not our tempo. But hey, you know, you can't win them all. And then I will give them credit. The segue into Help on the Way right afterward, like, snaps the crowd to their feet. Like, they charge right into it and everyone is locked in. Although I will say, this Help Slip Frank, I also don't think is that great. I'm sorry to say. I think that there's a really cool dreamy jam towards the back half of this Help on the Way. There's a really cool sax solo. And there are a couple of other high points, but like, overall, the energy is still very sleepy for all three of these songs. And I think that these songs are meant to be songs that get people up and dancing. And so for them to be as slow as they are, just I'm not crazy about it.
Like you said, the coolest thing about a Help on the Way is if you're playing something else and all of a sudden you hit the burnout, like everybody going nuts there was great. I think the Slipknot is the high point of this trio, and I think that's because Slipknot and Let It Grow both benefit as frenetic, chaotic songs. They benefit with a large band playing lots of different parts, because that's kind of what it feels like anyway in a Dead song on a traditional stage with a traditional band lineup. So adding in like the horns and the sax, it definitely doesn't hurt this, it only helps it. And
Completely agree. There's this moment where like the whole band lands the plane in Slipknot. I wrote down 6:15. The horns and strings sound amazing. Like that is, I think it's undeniably the high point of this trio. It sounds awesome.
yeah, and I
Any
enjoyed around the 2 minute mark of Slipknot. Bobby comes out of the blue with this like funk riff on guitar that he wanted to bust out, and I really, really enjoyed that too.
Yeah.
Into the Franklins, this is actually the song where I think the pedal steel doesn't help. I think, if you're used to a large Indian bead string of notes being constructed by Jerry or John Mayer or, any lead guitarist covering this song.
Yeah, the Tedeschi Trucks Band covers this song a lot, actually,
Oh, okay.
and
And Derek
they do a good
Trucks doing
version of
his
it.
thing. Yeah. So that, kind of like Shakedown was not my tempo. This Franklin's was not for me. But what I did like was in the chorus of the song, you've got space between the roll away and the do. And in the slow down tempo, you have a lot of space. And the brass was able to fill it in nicely, which that was a joy to hear.
Yes, completely agree. I wrote the same thing down. I had it 350 during the chorus. It sounds awesome. But the issue again for me is just how slow it is. It's so slow. Like there Bob has a totally new vocal delivery on this song I've never heard before. That was like the first note that I wrote down, and then it continues throughout the song, but it's like a haltingly slow vocal delivery. And then the tempo after that chorus with the cool brass section that you were talking about, the tempo just gets so slow afterwards. That just, yeah, I think that that being, I would say, kind of this, I mean, literally the centerpiece of the second set, and from Shakedown through Franklin's, with the minor exception of some high points in Slipknot being really energetic and sounding really cool, that's what to me makes this second set the weaker of the two sets.
But I think it's going to get redeemed with the next and last two songs of the set. They're going to close set two with the other one into Morning Dew. And in the other one, immediately I was into what Bobby was doing on the guitar. He's noodling around. Chimenti's keeping it weird with these like jarring notes that hit your brain. And it's a good extended intro jam of what, like 2.5, 3 minutes before they actually get going with the other one. And
By like the 4 minute mark, they're completely cooking.
then around the 7 minute mark, they get into some type two jamming thanks to the violin, which I did not see coming. The violin having like standout moment on this song, but I really enjoyed that. And then the other thing I really enjoyed about this one was kind of a callback to the air quotes first draft of the song, like the album version, where the backing vocals brought back the round in a circle backing part, which that was cool to hear. Like it
Agreed.
You know, that's something that I don't know what year it went away in the Dead's singing, but that part kind of went away and maybe
Definitely.
post hiatus, maybe in the 80s, but
I think even before that, I think by the early 70s it was gone.
yeah, but it was
But
cool to hear that come back.
yeah, it was. The coming around moment that you're talking about is like 12:25 is just awesome. Jay is beating the shit out of those toms. That sounds really good. It's still, I think, overall a pretty restrained performance on the whole, but a really good one. And I agree with you that it's like a redemptive moment, which then leads to like a full-blown, masterpiece ending to the second set. There's like a very cool kind of soft segue into Morning Dew where it feels like the other one is complete and over, but then you hear those triumphant first notes of Morning Dew, which sounds even bigger with horns backing
Yeah.
it. And it's just like, oh shit, here we go. I can't even imagine like being in the barn and hearing that come out of the set that's been going on with how slow everything's been, and then you get that moment and you know that the set's gonna end with a Morning Dew. Just awesome. I love the horns throughout the opening minutes of this song. Just absolutely magnificent, and to me, like the high point of the early part of this song.
We don't have Wolf Brothers stats that are easily accessible. But the other one, Into Morning Dew, is a combo that the Dead did 23 times. And 11 of those 23, so basically half, are after 1990. So this was a combo that, you know, about half the time was in the last decade of them performing. And I think it might be one that an older Bob likes. They're too songs from the 60s that I was expecting 60, 70 results, and only see 23 times where they played these back to back. I was really surprised by that.
Yeah.
And I kind of don't know why, because they really, really work well together.
They do. I mean, Morning Dew as a set closer and as a show closer, undefeated.
Yeah,
I
just
mean,
incredible.
when it hits your ears, especially when you're there, it's just like it's a spectacular moment. And this one just really delivers on that. I love the vocal delivery on You Didn't Hear No Young Man.
Yeah.
That part.
The 6 minute mark, he goes for the scream, and I kind of braced. I was like, uh-oh. And he
No, he crushes
fucking
it.
nails it. Yeah. And I
Yeah.
was like, let's go. He's still got it, baby.
Especially like last, second to last song of a 5 night run, you could forgive him for his vocal cords failing him a little bit. Not at all. Like maybe even like save the best for last. And then you get this big swell of sound from the whole band right after that moment. That's just like one of the best musical moments of the night, I think, and makes way for an awesome sax solo. And then you get into like the dueling solos part later in the song, which to me was like one of the most memorable things about seeing the Wolf Bros was for me, the big jam vehicle was Eyes of the World. And it just was like, all right, sax, now trumpet, now trombone, here comes the violin, here comes the cello, just like boom, 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 and then back to the front and let's run it back a second time. This song was, I think, the most that we got of that. You get like the violin, then the sax, then the trumpet, and it just all sounds so good. I think to me, this is like not, it's not even close. Like, this is the high point of set two and just an awesome note to end the show on.
Yeah, that Me and My Uncle was really good, but that's like good musically. This is good emotionally. Like, this just
Yeah.
delivers a triumphant ending. And yeah, I'm not going to dispute that high point of set two. And if you aren't as high on the Let It Grow as we were, and you think this was the high point of the show, I would respect
Yeah,
that too.
me too.
The ending is tremendous. Chimenti hits it like right before Bob ends it. He hit it with a little walk up that I was just like, you know, icing on the cake is the phrase that came to mind. I was like, ooh, it was already
Yep.
really good before, but now it's that little extra dash of something great.
Yeah.
And then that's it for set two. And they come back for the encore of Broke Down Palace, which I think is pretty fitting end to a 5 night run. And I don't have a lot of notes. I kind of just, you know,
I
it had
actually don't
been
either.
quite an hour, couple hours of music, and I sat back and kind of enjoyed it. But
I didn't have notes for a very different reason, actually. So when I listened to this song, like breaks me up, Broke Down Palace, like just really hits me in my feels. And especially like the chorus, obviously, fare thee well, I love you more than words can tell. Where we are in like Bob just having died, I got like a minute and a half into it on the listen through where I was taking notes. We obviously listened to these shows a few times, and I was just like, I can't do this right now, actually. I need to like not listen to that. So I only got like a minute and 20 seconds into my note-taking version, and then I literally went and watched like a comedic YouTube video to try to bring myself out. I
Way
was not
back,
ready
yeah.
to be in those emotions in that moment. The only note that I have for it as a result is we're back to a simpler arrangement, and then I stopped. That song is what they played as an encore when I saw them in Durham, and I got like choked up in the barn. The last couple of times that I heard Dead and Company play it, same thing. There's just something about that song that just like really, really hits me. And it felt a little bit like Bob calling to us from beyond the grave now. Fare thee well, I love you more than words can tell. He did love his fans, obviously. And so I just kind of let that one lie. I'll come back to it eventually.
That's such a good, powerful note to end on, man. There's nothing to add there. Just, like you said, this song will give you feelings, and those feelings are exponentially compounded with, the recent news of his passing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best thing that art can do is stir you to feeling some level of emotion, whether that is sadness, happiness, joy, even like discomfort. That's, I
Yeah.
think, what art is ultimately here for. So, mission accomplished, Bob Weir and the Wolf Bros.
Mission accomplished.
Let's land this plane.
Well, so we usually play what song would you take onto an imaginary playlist that we've been building since the beginning of this podcast.
I don't think we can do it.
I don't think we can do it
Yeah.
either. And we've already talked about the high points. So
The hard thing is they played five nights and they played like literally every song. And so, because where my mind originally was like, what song would you want to hear with like this arrangement? But the
yeah.
reality is you can go listen to them.
You're
Like they
right.
probably played it. So I think that to me, it's just more appreciation that Bob played all of this music, that all of it is recorded. We have such voluminous records of Bob's music. You could probably take on the lifelong project of listening to every Bob Weir performance that has been recorded, and I'm not sure you could get through it in your lifetime. Between Bobby and the Midnights, Kingfish,
Yeah.
Rat Dog, Further, The Other Ones, The Dead and Company, Bob Weir and the Wolf Bros, you're talking about like thousands upon thousands of hours of music. And so I'm glad that we got to kind of dip into this later period, Bob Weir kind of solo act, as a continuance of our in memoriam of Bob Weir. And I think that, just to wrap up some of the things that we talked about in our memorial episode, the best tribute to Bob is to keep going and seeing live music,
Right.
keep listening to this music, and let it live on.
Yeah. And after you do that, and you have any Bobby story from his time in the Dead, from seeing him in Dead and Company, from maybe you went to a Rat Dog show in 98 or whatever. If you have any story about Bob Weir or your time seeing a Dead show, it doesn't have to be Bobby specific, but please write to us and let us know. We would love to read them and potentially share a story or two on the mic. And please write to us at Working Man's Pod. It's all one word, no apostrophe, no spaces. Working Man's Pod, POD at gmail.com. We'd love to, our mourning of Bobby is not over, and we'd love to hear some experiences or some stories that the people who hopefully are older than us and went to shows in the 70s, 80s, 90s could share with us. Or if you're a teenager and you saw Dead and Co in 2023 and you had a good experience there too, we'd love to hear it all. So that would be my second call to the listeners this episode. But if you have a Bobby story or just a Dead story that reminds you of Bob, please share.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, and until 2 weeks'
The
time,
best
we bid
man
you good
bids you
night.
good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
And I bid you good night.
That's it. You got it.